Girlfriends, episode number 366, Math Class with Father Dave Dwyer. Hello and welcome to Girlfriends. I'm Danielle Bean. I'm a wife and a mom, and I'm on a mission to help you know your worth as a woman so you can find peace, balance, and joy in family living. This week, our special guest is Father Dave Dwyer from SiriusXM, and his new book, Math Class, is one you're going to want to learn more about. Let's get started with this great conversation. Hello, girlfriend. Happy Easter. I hope you are enjoying the season. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Thrilled to be able to join you here together on the podcast during the joyful season of Easter. I hope you're having a great celebration with your family. And know this, it's only just getting started, right? We have 40 days of Lent, but then we have 50 days of Easter. That's how good God is. So you get to celebrate for 50 days. So if you haven't made the special Easter bread yet, or the bunny cupcakes, or if you haven't colored eggs or done the egg hunt or made the resurrection cookies or whatever, you've got 50 days, okay? So make sure you are celebrating for 50 days. What a joy. I'm thrilled to know that we have that long. You know, 1 year at the Easter Vigil, our pastor kind of reminded us all of the 50 days of Easter, and he encouraged us to make a plan for celebrating all 50 days. And I don't remember specifically what we did, but I did take that seriously. And we kind of like made a plan, like we planned out special trips and like different things we were going to do as a family. Nothing big, but, you know, just kind of encouraging the kids, especially when they were littler, to recognize like Easter is an ongoing season. And we are, you know, celebrating this long because it's this big a deal. And that was really, really kind of cool. So I'm going to encourage you to do that this year. And in turn, I am reminding myself, this is like one of the great benefits of recording the Girlfriends podcast. And actually anything that I ever share online is like, I'm talking to you, but I'm also talking to me. That's part of what I get to do, is remind myself of these things that are important and give myself these thoughts and these ideas, and hopefully be a voice of encouragement because I need it. I need it. I'm right there with you. So that's why the show is called Girlfriends, because we're in this together. All right. So I had this really fun conversation with Father Dave Dwyer. If you are not familiar with him, you need to check out all that he is offering. But he had this conversation with me recently to share about his new book, Math Class, and had the opportunity to ask him some questions. And he is so knowledgeable, but also just such a joy to connect with. I know you're going to love hearing more from Father Dave. So here you are. Take a listen to my recent conversation. Joining me here today on Girlfriends is Father Dave Dwyer. Father Dave is Executive Director of Busted Halo, a media outreach of the Paulist Fathers, and the award-winning host of the Busted Halo Show weeknights on SiriusXM Radio. He's a popular speaker, mission preacher, and television commentator who has worked in campus ministry in Colorado and Texas. Prior to ordination, he directed television for MTV and Comedy Central. We're going to definitely talk about those things, but especially we're going to talk today about his newest project, which is a book called Math Class, Your Questions Answered. Welcome to Girlfriends, Father Dave Dwyer. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you, Danielle. Great to be with the girlfriends. I guess I'm a guy friend for today, just for
yes,
today.
Yes, we get a guy friend today. So when I started Girlfriends over 6 years ago, I only had women on for a long time. I went like 2 years where it was like just the girlfriends. And then I decided to let some guys in because my husband nice wanted to come on the show. So I was like, all right, I guess.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. Yes, it gives us some varied content here. So you've got this this popular radio show. You've got this really interesting background, having directed TV for MTV and Comedy Central, which, you know, I can definitely see those talents that come out in what you do on radio. Maybe just before we dive into the book and all of that content, share with us a little bit about what's your hero backstory? You know, how did you wind up where you are?
Hero backstory, I guess, opening scene of that movie, of origin story, if you will, would be me at World Youth Day in 1993 in Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. I was a young adult, probably 28 at the time, had always been, even for my teen years, involved in church, but thought that God was calling me to use my gifts and talents in the secular world, in media, entertainment, as you mentioned, I worked at MTV. And so a lot of my friends from church, or particularly like my mom's friends from church, were like, How can scandalous. Now, also to my credit, this was the 1980s. It was mostly music videos and, you know, Madonna writhing around on the floor was the worst thing on MTV. I mean, today I can't imagine myself. Obviously, I'm a different person too. So I went to World Youth Day, and although I'd been involved in church and Catholicism for many years up until that point and was pretty involved with ministry, on the ministry side, like being a volunteer and running retreats and all that, I had never in my life thought about priesthood. And so when I went to World Youth Day in 1993, Pope John Paul II and the Holy Spirit speaking through him and other events like, you know, big rainbows over Mile High Stadium, things like that, really working all the emotions. An unmistakable call that was very specifically to priesthood and not just, you know, be a better Catholic or make sure to use your time after work more efficiently for the church. And I came home and started inquiring with vocation directors. And in less than a year, I was in with the Paul's Fathers.
Wow. Okay. I love that. Yeah. It was that clear to you and you responded immediately.
Pretty immediately. One of the guys that I was ordained with, he was in his 40s when we were ordained. And ever since he was 7 years old, he was thinking about being a priest and his path was like windy and would go and come back. And I'm like, well, God had a different timeline for me, which is good because I don't have a lot of patience.
Yeah, and you're so prolific with the great work that you do. So let's talk a little bit about this book, especially Mass Class, Your Questions Answered. Why did you feel called to write this book? Like, why now?
The why now, I could be as if I was very prescient a few years ago and say, well, we've got a good Eucharistic revival going on. And in order for people to really appreciate what it is we believe, they kind of got to know. And a lot of Catholics don't know answers to basic questions. I could say that. The true answer, Danielle, is that one of my brother Paulists, who runs Paulist Press, the oldest independent Catholic book publishing company in America, has been bugging me for years to do a book because there's kind of a built-in audience when you've got a big big audience radio show. And I didn't put the satellites up in space. Somebody else did that. So it's not, I can't really take credit for how many people are listening. But for a while, they've been inviting me to take some of the content of the radio show and try to put it into book form. And ever since we launched on the air in 2006, we've been doing a feature every week on Wednesdays called Mass Class, where people can call in and ask their questions about the Mass. I mean, I figured people have questions about a lot of things about Catholicism, but because Mass is probably the most common experience we have, therefore we probably have the most questions about that. And everything from little picayune things to more significant, like, why do we have to go, really? And what does it mean to say that Jesus is really present in the Eucharist? So the idea was to collect questions that I'd answered over the years on the radio show, and even technologically, like Paul's Press said, hey, you know, you're busy, you don't have time to write a book, so we'll just get the audio and we'll transcribe it and we'll have our editors kind of clean it up and we'll show it to you before we publish it. Well, when they showed it to me, I'm like, oh my gosh, is that what I sound like? This is horrible. I must rewrite all this. So really, I did write the book. So
the one thing, audio is not the same as written.
It's not the same. If you transcribe what's going on right now, you wouldn't want to be flipping through pages as you're with a cup of tea, you know, in your favorite chair. But what we did genuinely use is people's actual questions. And that's one of the things that I like about this book, because there's certainly, over the years in Catholic circles, I've seen a lot of Q&A books about the Catholic faith and even about the Mass. And there's plenty of exhaustive and very theological and liturgical books about the Mass. I wasn't trying to be better or to duplicate those. But I'm fairly sure that there are at least some questions that are in this book that are not found in others, because they're things that genuinely surprised me. And not that they're stupid questions, but things that just, if we celebrate Mass all the time, sometimes I don't think about, oh, yeah, that's actually, I never thought of that. That's a pretty good question. Yeah. So that's why we called it Your Questions Answered, because they are genuinely questions from the people.
Right. Okay, so you mentioned some surprising ones. I would love to hear some examples of those. Like, what were the things that kind of stood out to you?
Well, we do, in the book, we have, as you saw, we have a little sort of icon for things that are our top five all time. And by that, I don't mean the top five most spiritually relevant or the top five most controversial that are going to get, you know, clicks or whatever. Just over the years, this seems to be what people call in more times than other times.
Okay.
And one of those, I mean, and this is probably fairly relevant in our post-COVID days, you know, does it count quote unquote, Catholics love that term. Does it count if I watch on TV or listen on the radio? Actually, up until the pandemic, one of the most, if not the most popular question that we ever got is, what do we do with our hands at the Our Father? You know, people that didn't like the cold and clammy when you're reaching across the aisle and like, I don't know this person, like wiping them on your shirt after that. Yeah. And so people, and quite honestly, more people that called with that were the people that were not a fan of it. Like, what are we supposed to do?
Right. Sure. Sure.
So that's in the book.
And Am I allowed to skip that?
Unfortunately, that's, and it's less of an issue now since the pandemic because there's less hand-holding. But unfortunately, that's one of those ones where there is not really a good answer from the universal documents of the church. The posture that is indicated by the general instruction on the Roman Missal, which is our master plan, the instructions for how we celebrate Mass around the world, which is adapted sometimes locally for cultural adaptations and whatnot and variations, that merely says that we're standing. It doesn't say we got our hands in our pockets. It doesn't say thumb over thumb like a First Communion girl. It doesn't say up in the air like, you know, charismatic. It doesn't say anything about the hands.
Okay. So it leaves ultimately room.
That comes down to local custom. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, good. I'm glad you answered that one. But I do want you to answer the other one that you brought up, because during the pandemic, I did hear at Girlfriends, we heard from people who were wondering about exactly that. First of all, they were wondering, does watching Mass on TV count? You know, is it legit? And then they were also wondering whether it counts or not. Like, do I have to do it? Like, there were people that just felt gross about it. Like, they didn't like it, right? And I can relate to that a little bit. Like, you know, it just felt like this is kind of a silly thing I'm doing in my living room. So, like, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, if we rewind to 3 years ago, and the situation's a little different now, I mean, almost all bishops around the world released Catholics from the obligation to attend Sunday Mass because of a global pandemic. So that means that it doesn't have to count because there's nothing to count against. So when we say count, we mean our Sunday obligation. And therefore, it neither counts nor doesn't count when we're talking about something like daily Mass or something that is optional. So really, count means, is somebody like the angel, Archangel Gabriel, is he clicking that clicker when I walk in?
Is it counting? We want the click. We want the click.
You got to click. You got to have the click attached to me. So the answer is no, it doesn't count. But all the bishops said, it doesn't need to count for now because of this. And quite frankly, that was always the case. It was really just an expansion because of the extreme nature of the pandemic, an expansion of a rule that's always in place, which is your obligation is released for you if you are either gravely ill or if being in proximity with that many people would cause you harm, like if you're immunosuppressed or something like that. So that's always been the case. That's part of our canon law. And yet the bishops just kind of made that clear. So then the second part, which is interesting, which is not one that I've heard before, Danielle. So I'm glad I came on the Girlfriends podcast. Which
you're going to hear it here.
Okay. If it doesn't need to count, do we really have to sit in our living room and pop open the laptop? Can we just say it doesn't count? And when we come back, I mean, I think there are certainly values. Why do it would be, hopefully, we believe, I mean, I think our Christian brothers and sisters are maybe a little stronger on this than we emphasize in the Catholic Church, but that the Word of God is alive and rich and powerful. And as the scripture says about itself, sharper than a two-edged sword. So even just hearing the word proclaimed, obviously you could do that in a different way. A lot of people follow along with the Mass readings and prepare for Sunday Mass in advance, particularly those that have got kids, so that maybe during that 1 hour, it's not 100% strict focus on somebody who's way up in the front and the sound system isn't great and the person's got a little bit of an accent or just mumbling or something like that. And I got the kid tugging on me and asking for more Cheerios. So many people I know, many families, will actually, either before or after or both, the experience of Mass, somehow take in the scripture readings, whether it's looking on their phone or something like the Magnificat or Word Among Us or many of those other resources. And so, yeah, obviously you could take in the word that way. I think there certainly is a value. We're seeing, Danielle, now, like 3 years in, we're seeing the detrimental effect that the pandemic and being at home and getting out of the habit of going to places, and not just church, going to places has had on our community and our world. And it's something that, you know, quite honestly, the church in terms of attendance and various other things that are related to that has not fully bounced back from. I think here in the States, it's on average roughly somewhere between 60 and 70% of the numbers that were actually showing up in church prior to that. So I think there's value at least in staying connected to the community in some way, mm-hmm. maintaining the habit. One of the reasons why we do Lent that we're in right now is humanly and psychologically to break a habit or to establish a habit takes a certain amount of time. And right. the pandemic lasted a lot longer than Lent. So people kind of broke that habit, not only of getting in the car and driving and getting the parking lot and getting the kids out and putting in the pew, but just that regular weekly rhythm that we see right. way back in the Old Testament, where God, you know, created the rhythms of the world and said, every week we should have this rhythm built in. And when we remove that for a year and a half or 2 years or whatever it was, mm-hmm. very hard to reestablish that.
Yeah, yeah. I've certainly witnessed that in our kind of empty and emptying pews at our yeah. our local parish. And I kind of cringe a little, Father, when our pastor, you know, love him, but he does, yeah. you know, at the after communion, he reads the spiritual communion prayer for those folks who are tuning in, you know?
Right,
and
right.
I'm like, this is so confusing for the people sitting in the pews who just received communion.
Right.
And it's sending a message that this is still like legit going on, even right. though I know right. some people are truly housebound and, sure. you know, of sure. course, I don't sure. want to deny yeah. them access in that way, right. but it's such a tricky thing. So I wonder if you could speak a little bit about how we as parents, because so many people listening here at Girlfriends are moms, and how do we address that with our kids when maybe even from the pulpit, you're hearing something that's like, well, not exactly, or the message
the
from the church at large.
Of being in person, you mean?
Being in person, the importance right, sure, of sure. attending Mass in person.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think moms would know about this even more so than I. What I've heard anecdotally, and we're starting to see a little more kind of scientific research and data about, is let's use the parallel example of being in person in school. Mm-hmm. That was, in many cases, and of course, like not 100% across the board, but in many cases, detrimental to education and growth and a lot of other things.
Right.
Notwithstanding, you know, good examples of things like homeschool, where people were already in a phase of not necessarily going down to the local school every day.
Right.
But obviously, that there is something to be said, and I think those, from what I know, and I've never homeschooled myself, but from what I know of the best homeschool approaches, do involve at least some, you know, group interaction, and it's not yeah. just the bubble of our family. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I mean, whatever parallels we can draw from that, I would say would at least be that on that human and communal dimension of coming together in person, seeing other people, even just reinforcing the faith of young people where mm-hmm. there's most of the other sort of context that they find themselves in during the course of a day, if they are going to public school or Catholic school, leaving the house and whatnot, then they're around a lot of people that oftentimes, because we don't really talk about it a lot, we don't know who's Catholic and who's not.
Right.
And so it's not so much of, you know, can I evaluate my friends based on their religion? But when I'm going through all those questions that kids do growing up, like what is this stuff that I believe and how is it different from what other people believe? Even just to physically see and be in the presence of my peers when we're at Sunday Mass and see somebody from church, that makes a big difference. I was at an event over the weekend at my alma mater, Syracuse University, and there was a big function on Saturday night that involved alumni and current students. And I met some people walking around at the reception, met some people. And then the next day, I went to the Catholic Campus Ministry for Mass, and I saw one or two of the students there. And just that reconnection was unexpected for me.
Right.
Because I don't expect a lot of college students to go to Mass. I mean, some of them do for sure.
Great.
But there was an additional level of, oh, aha, here's this relationship. Here's an affirmation of, I would imagine for them as well. You know, here mm-hmm. I come to Mass and there was 100 people that I knew last night at the event, Saturday night, and now there's 3 of us here at Mass. But if there was none of that, then right. I would think it would be a lot easier to drift away from the practice of the faith and even have those questions unanswered and all that sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's really valuable, that kind of communal experience and seeing that you're not alone in it. Because I know we're homeschoolers, and we have been for years, and I've always kind of battled that kind of holding that line with our own kids. Like, yeah, I know we're weirdos in a lot of ways. Like, you're the only one doing this, doing that, doing whatever. But as much as I could, I always wanted them to have that communal experience and see ways that their peers were being raised similarly or with similar values. And so I think that's a really, really interesting take on it. I really appreciate that. Okay, well, let's talk about some misconceptions about the Mass. You must hear them all the time. Like, what are some of the most common misconceptions about what the Mass is or why we go?
Well, I mean, not to continue to focus on the legalistic part as we as Catholics talk about the counting, but there, two unrelated things are whether or not I fulfill my Sunday obligation by going to Mass. Mm-hmm. And again, if you don't go and you're dispensed for a good reason, then you're dispensed. It's not like you're fulfilling it from afar. So we never right. fulfill our Sunday obligation distantly. We either mm-hmm. don't have to fulfill it or we're not fulfilling it. Mm-hmm. And we're right. you know, sinning by not fulfilling it. Or we are. Those are the three options. Mm-hmm. They are, and we're there. So, but that is completely disconnected from whether or not we receive communion. So sometimes people will have the misconception that I'm only fulfilling my Sunday obligation if I receive communion. And therefore, sometimes you can go either way with that. Like if I'm there and I'm there for the whole Mass, but I don't receive communion, am I in sin or did I not mm-hmm. fulfill my obligation? Or the other way around. Well, if I didn't go, but somehow I, you know, get communion, you know, like yeah. does somebody bring it to me? And obviously we do have those exceptional cases for people that are homebound or in hospitals. But even in that case, if a communion minister brings you communion in a hospital, we don't say, okay, you fulfilled your Sunday obligation. Again, right. you're in that category of you don't have to because you're in a mm-hmm. hospital. So those right. things are distinct. So that's one misconception. I mean, I don't know if this is a misconception, but I think of something that I see in practice that I wanted to emphasize in the book. And in fact, last week at 2 weeks ago, I guess, at LA Congress, where I was asked to give a talk about the book, and we had about 600 people in a workshop, I didn't answer all the questions in the book, but I pulled out some, I would see as some basic underlying themes. And the first one I started with is that Mass is a we thing, not a me thing.
Okay.
And I'm sure over the centuries, there's been different examples of that. Today in our modern world, the way I see that manifest or the misunderstanding of that or the misappreciating or living out of that notion, which I believe mm-hmm. is a simplifying of what's in the church documents. This isn't like a Father Dave coming up with this concept. Yeah. So, I mean, you can read more theological language and lots of canon laws and footnotes and all that, but a lot of it comes down to it's yeah. a we thing, not a me thing. So what we do together is not about someone's individual piety or devotion. We encourage individual piety and devotion. Mm-hmm. And yet at Mass, if we see people doing different things, kneeling or standing or receiving communion in different ways, because that person is saying this, I am so devoted mm-hmm. to the Eucharist that I believe I should do this. I would say what's wrong with that sentence is the pronouns, that Mass is never about I, never mm-hmm. about me. And if you look at the prayers of the Mass, there is as much, if not more, actual words of the Eucharistic prayer talking about bringing us together as one body as there is about let's change these things on the altar into Jesus. In mm-hmm. fact, the words are much more restricted in terms of the amount of time that we spend praying, the number of words about them. It's much more about us. So I talked about one sort of really Mass-focused example mm-hmm. of it being we, that I mentioned it in the talk a couple of weeks ago, is the times that we call down the Holy Spirit for some fancy theological language on the Girlfriends podcast. It's called the epiclesis. So the epiclesis okay. in Greek is for the calling down. The most visual way you can think about that is when the priest says, let your spirit come upon these gifts, and then usually he takes his hands and he kind of swooshes them down and hovers right. them over the bread and wine. So mm-hmm. that is the most obvious epiclesis, but there are actually two, one that's a little less visually noticeable, two during the course of the Eucharistic prayer. One, when we ask the Spirit to come down upon bread and wine and make a miraculous change in them. And then a few lines later in the Eucharistic prayer, when we ask the Spirit to do the same thing over us. So there's two epicleses, I guess, in the Eucharistic prayer. And the second one is the calling down of the Holy Spirit to make us one body healed of all division. Mm-hmm. And so it is it's important in the theology of the Mass, ecclesiology, we would call it, the theology of church, mm-hmm. that we are one. And in fact, the general instruction on the Roman Missal in several parts says that a way in which this is underscored and reinforced for those of us participating and even so for the outside world, like somebody poking their head in the church, is that we are uniform in things like posture and gesture and responses. And so when mm-hmm. people choose their own, yeah. that I believe that belies that and breaks that very important tenet of what the Mass is about. So, I mean, the example that I gave, which may sound silly, is that everybody knows during the Liturgy of the Word, so when we're having the readings, during the first two readings, we are seated in the pews. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, we stand up when we proclaim the gospel, when we hear the gospel. And right. I go into that, and there's a question about that. But just imagine that, you know, none of us got to vote on that. So if you imagine somebody who is this huge fan of St. Paul, big St. Paul devotee, could take or leave Matthew, Mark, and Luke, you know? And for that person, they would want to, out of respect and reverence, stand up during the second reading because they love Paul.
Okay.
Imagine what that looks like in the church.
Yeah.
And then they'd be sitting down during the gospel. Well, of course, you and I could chuckle and say, well, of course, nobody would ever do that. But people do that at other times during the Mass when I see different postures. And again, not to cast aspersions or judge anybody, coming from a good place in the heart, but I think a fundamental misunderstanding that there are times and places in our spiritual lives where certain things are appropriate, and Mass is a we thing, not a me thing. So if you look around and nobody else is doing the same thing as you, I don't care what it is, you're wrong.
When in Rome.
Well, and that was my second principle, is when in Rome, you do as the Romans do. And a lot of people don't realize that actually comes from Mass.
Oh, really?
Because Yes, before we were global and before we could tune into Masses all around the world and say, hey, wait a minute, they're doing Mass in California on my live stream and he's tinkling the bells at a different time. Before there was any of that, as we celebrated Mass in different places and there was less travel and less globalization, different customs would grow up in different places a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And there was, and there still is today, what they call a Milanese rite of the Catholic Church, how they celebrated Mass in Milan, which was not starkly different from how they celebrated it in Rome, but it was different enough that on the rare occasions that somebody would travel from Milan to Rome, they would be a little out of sorts because maybe they do the petitions at a different point in the Mass and like, what's going on here? And so when people would be like, hey, I'm Milanese and this is how I do it, so I'm going to be here in Rome and I'm going to do it the way I do it, we needed to come up with the maxim: when in Rome, you do as the Romans do.
Right.
Doesn't matter what you do in Milan. Now, these days, we're much more top down. We're much more global. It's a lot easier to have universal norms because people see what's going on. But that comes from that. And I see that, unfortunately, badly lived out. And part of it is not through nobody's being necessarily antagonistic.
Right.
But you do things a lot out of habit and out of rote. So if you hold hands or you kneel and they do that as something a little different at different churches. Like, wait, so you could be doing it by mistake, but unfortunately I see more often than not people, if they're from some other parish and they do this there, they're going to, you know, sort of stubbornly do
the
this
right
here
way. Right.
Because all of you guys are wrong. And that's where I would sort of push back and say, it is about us and not just about you. And when in Rome.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it's so funny. One thing that came to mind as you were describing that kind of importance of emphasizing unity, especially at communion time. I wonder if I can get your thoughts on this. This is potentially a controversial topic where people will go up in the communion line to receive a blessing rather than receive communion.
Right.
Like, where does that fall into play? This is something that's kind of bothered me sometimes as a mom through the years. Like, maybe you're receiving from an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion and like I'm holding a baby and they go to bless my baby, which, I mean, nice and whatever. That's not what I'm there for. And also, like, maybe you could also tell me about this since I've got you on the spot here. who has authority to give a blessing, right? Because I've always considered it someone who has spiritual authority over someone else is the one to give the blessing. So, of course, a priest, I want to bless my child, but, you know, my neighbor who happens to be distributing communion that morning, not so much. So I'd love your thoughts on that.
Right. Well, so there's this is a can of worms. So this is, and I'm fine.
I knew it was, do it. Let's do it.
But you're going to have to, you know, stretch
I'll deal
out
the with the
podcast
aftermath.
Or do some editing later or something. So so there's two angles on that. One is the part that you mentioned at the end, which is who can bless. Now, you know, as a mom, that as a Catholic and in the Catholic Book of Blessings and certainly in our tradition, we can bless all one another. And I hope that perhaps before your kids go to bed at night, you might pray with them. You might even trace the sign of the cross and therefore it. So we can bless. The church does make a little bit of a distinction about how appropriate that is in the context of Mass. So I wouldn't necessarily frame it in the same way you did, that somebody that has spiritual authority should offer a blessing, because if I'm at the cash register, and this actually happened to me recently, and I don't even know why, but if I'm at the cash register checking out and somebody says, God bless you, or God blessing is on you, I want that blessing from that person.
I see that.
So we do. So there's obviously, I mean, you could say there's capital B blessing or lowercase or whatever it is. I mean, but in the Catholic Church, certainly we do have different hierarchies and different stances. And so you would see in some dioceses, they've actually addressed this, and they'll say that let's take for granted for a second that some people in the communion line will not actually be receiving. And so some dioceses or even some parishes, they'll say, rather than a blessing, something like what you were talking about before in terms of spiritual communion, like what we used to call actually ocular communion, which is showing the host to somebody and to say something like receive Jesus in your heart or something like that. So, I mean, some dioceses prefer that because it doesn't tread into that somewhat gray area of should only the priest be doing a blessing at Mass. You know, when we're in church and let's say a deacon is baptizing your baby, he asks the parents and the godparents to bless with the sign of the cross. So it's not like in church we can't do blessings of other people and babies. So that's all a little more gray. But the other piece is it's more of an issue or more something to talk about. And I did mention this in front of the big crowd at LA Congress. Please don't expect if you go to some other country and you get up in the communion line and you put your hands in an X across your chest, that they're going to know what the heck you're doing. This is a fairly uniquely, not 100%, but a fairly uniquely American thing that has emerged since the time of Second Vatican Council that is not indicated in any liturgical book anywhere. It's kind of like the answer that I was giving before about the holding hands of the Our Father, also fairly uniquely American in many ways. So the arms crossed across the chest is not something that is universal. Now, it is a fairly strong custom for decades here in the United States. So, and that's how customs actually emerge. And so, there's nothing wrong with that in essence. But if we think about fundamentally what's going on here, when people get up to go get communion, that's sometimes how we call it, it is properly referred to in the Mass as the communion procession. It's a procession. So the people that are in that line are there for a reason. In the same way that at the beginning of Mass, not every single person, with a few exceptions, like maybe Palm Sunday, but most times when you're at Mass, not everybody processes in. They're in their pews, and the people that are in the procession are the people that have a reason to be in the procession because they're doing something that has to do with the procession, like the ministers and the presiders, like the person carrying the cross, like the priest who's going to end up, like he needs to get from point A to point B. That's why there's a procession. Think of something else. The procession with the gifts that many parishes still do. If you're at the halfway back or all the way back in the church, there are some people who are asked, not the entire congregation, but some people are asked to bring up the gifts of bread and wine. Now, sometimes, I mean, you stretch it a little bit here. Maybe it's a family of four and there's only actually two things to carry. That's not such a big deal. But again, it's not the entire congregation looking around going, hey, wait, they're all going up to the front. I should do that. I should join.
Right.
So where this came from is, again, from a good place and nothing to be, you know, mocked or saying is silly. I would say two major factors emerged to create, well, probably three that came together, to create this custom that we have of people going up who are not intending to receive the sacrament, but going up in the line anyway. One is more frequent communion, because back like 100 years ago, you know, the three people went up and everybody else is staying in the pew because not that many people were receiving communion. So since the early 20th century, when the Pope encouraged more frequent communion, and we can have a different theological discussion about that, about our awareness of sin and state of grace and all that, but because a lot more people are going, then it turned into, you may remember this, people climbing over everybody in the pew. You're like, oh, pardon me, excuse me. And they're moving their legs to the side or stepping out of the pew, getting back in.
Awkward.
Obviously, that was cumbersome. Yeah. So it wasn't just a logistical thing, but the two factors that I'm thinking of is moms or dads. So families with children under the age of receiving communion that maybe even have brothers or sisters who already are. So, I mean, to have a family of four go up in the communion line and one, the youngest kid sitting back in the pew, aside from if you feel safe in doing that or any of those other factors, but that's just like, you know, the kid's going to start crying or what's going on here.
Danger zone for sure.
Yeah, danger zone. So that's just, you know, that's an issue. And then the other significant one would be non-Catholic spouses that out of devotion to their spouse, they show up at Mass, they know they're not supposed to receive. And while that, for many people, and there's questions about this in the book as well, while for many people, that leaves that spouse feeling kind of unwelcome or alienated. This was kind of a, maybe a halfway, a happy medium. You don't have to like stay in the back like you're, you know, the second class citizen while we all go get the prize and you got to stay here. Then they started joining in the line. And so once people were in the line, then obviously, Danielle, the communion minister's got to know, what do I do with this person? Is this person receiver or not? So then somebody said, I don't know, just put your hands across your chest. So there's, fundamentally, one could argue that the communion procession, again, more academically or in the books, should only be for those who are receiving communion, because you wouldn't you wouldn't have a procession of anything else. I mean, it's like the St. Patrick's Day parade when you got all those people in uniform and then a couple of drunk guys stumble onto the Fifth Avenue and start walking like they're in the parade. Everyone's like, they're not really in the parade. We get that they're not really in the parade. I mean, that's what it is. It's as almost as, I mean, we kind of take it for granted now, but, you know, centuries ago, somebody looking at what we do would consider it almost like that. It's like drunk people in the St. Patrick's Day parade. Like, why are they going up if they're not fulfilling the function of this communion procession? Now, practically, because the reasons that we just raised, I mean, there are issues and problems with that. And what do we do? Does one parent stay behind with the youngest kid and then swap places and we go up? Or do we have to say to the non-Catholic spouse, just suck it up and sorry that you feel that way? So, I mean, there's good reasons that we have this practice, but that's what plops us in the place where we are, where it's kind of like, what do we do? What if they cross their hands? Is it a blessing? Is it, hi, how you doing? So and this is one of the reasons why the church wouldn't legislate that, because there's not a lot of good answers or solutions that can be consistently applied across the board. And that's why we have such varied practice.
Right. Oh, that's very well said. Yeah, I appreciate that. And it, like, that's why we're in the messy place we are, because we're in a messy place living here on earth, right? Like, it's not going to be perfect.
It's not the kingdom yet.
Yes, exactly. I'm reminded of that every Sunday at Mass.
It's a foretaste, but it ain't the full meal. That's for sure.
Exactly true. All right. Well, we're just about out of time here, Father. I could ask you probably a million questions, but one
last
question.
That's why I wrote the book.
Yes, exactly. That's why we got to get a copy of the book. Again, the title is called Mass Class, Your Questions Answered. But one last question before we wrap up here.
Sure.
What do you wish simply more Catholics knew about the Mass? Like, what is that? Like, if you could snap your fingers and everybody knows X about the Mass, what would it be?
Well, I think there's and internalize. And I think my wish is united with that of the U.S. bishops and all those that are behind the Eucharistic revival, which is knowing, believing, appreciating, et cetera, all those different words, Christ's true presence in the sacrament. And that will take longer than we have for me to answer that question. But
that's what the Eucharistic revival's for, right?
Yeah, that's what the Eucharistic revival's for. But I think things like this, resources like this, are helpful. I saw a video, I think, done by Ascension Press just yesterday that was doing a good job. So, I mean, any ways in which we can have people just kind of not turn away at the headline of transubstantiation, or the headline that is Jesus' flesh, and let's go, that doesn't make sense. I don't know. I'm out of here. I don't believe that, or I need to go to church. To go beyond what just that headline is, and to use real world examples of why we experience that sort of thing in other aspects of life. I use very real world examples of, you know, meeting people you haven't seen in a long time and noticing a fundamental difference in who they are, even though they look the same. You know, there are other ways in which we can appreciate that happens. I mean, the fact that love and beauty and truth are not something you can measure with a microscope or with other scientific data. Sure. So, I mean, there are things that we can all agree on that is like that, because Catholics uniquely teach this, and then either other religions or just what people experience in the secular world doesn't reinforce that. That means there's not a lot of reinforcing of that belief. And so it's kind of on us to help that along. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the Eucharistic revival will do, hopefully.
Yes, I agree. I share that thought and that goal for sure, for more Catholics believing about the Mass. But I'm always comforted when I read the original teachings in the Gospels, where the original responses to Jesus was,
Yeah.
Oh, this is a hard teaching. Yeah. Right? Yeah. This is a hard teaching.
And half of them walked away.
Yeah, right. Who can believe that?
And you know what? In John chapter 6, he didn't, as they were walking away, he didn't stop them and go, oh, no, guys, no, no, I didn't mean that. Right. That would be silly. They walked away.
They walked away.
He's like, right. I get that this is hard to take in, but this is it. This is the truth.
Yeah. Oh, a beautiful truth it is. Well, Father Dave Dwyer, thank you so much for all that you do on Busted Halo. And thank you for this new book, the good work that you're doing, getting the word out and sharing the truth with people in the pews and outside the pews. I'm so grateful for all the good ministry that you are doing in your life. But thank you also for coming on Girlfriends to share about all of it.
And the Mass Class book, certainly you can get it at Amazon. No problem with that. Yes. If you go to Paulus Press gets a little bigger chunk. You know, Amazon.
Okay, so what's the website there?
Yeah. You got to take the VIG.
Oh gosh, I know. The worst. So yeah, if you want to support the Paulists more directly, so what is the website for the Paulist?
It's paulspress.com.
Paulspress.com. Easy. Mm-hmm. And we will have that linked up in the show notes as well. Absolutely. What a joy to talk with Father Dave Dwyer here today. We've got more of the show coming up for you, but first we're going to take a quick break. I'm Danielle Bean and you're listening to the Girlfriends Podcast.
Hi, my name is Father Mike Schmitz. I am the host of the Catechism in a Year podcast. If you've been following along with us, you know that God's plan for us is a plan of sheer goodness, that he wants to bring us into a relationship with him. You know that already. One of the ways that God actually brings us into this relationship and keeps us, sustains us in this relationship is through the sacraments. Again, you might know that already. You might further know that so many of us miss out on the beauty and the power of the sacraments. But Ascension has an answer to this. Ascension has created two new programs. One is called Renewed, Your Journey Towards First Reconciliation. The second is Received, Your Journey Towards First Holy Communion. We know that our youth, they're our future. And yet at the same time, it's so hard oftentimes to reach them with this incredible news of God's love for them in reconciliation, God's love for them in the Eucharist. If you want to check out Ascension's new program, Renewed, Your Journey Towards First Reconciliation, and Received, Your Journey Towards First Communion, go to ascensionpress.com and sign up for a free preview.
Welcome back. All right, now we're at the point in the show where I usually like to share a little bit of listener feedback or a listener question. And this week I heard from Danica. Danica said, "Hi, Danielle. I really appreciated your recent show about showing up. It made me think a lot about the different ways that I'm called to show up at my job as a mom and with my friends and family. One way I've been wanting to show up more in prayer is in adoration. I have never gone to Eucharistic adoration before, but I know there's a chapel near me and I would like to try it. I'm not really sure what is holding me back. Fear of the silence, maybe? Anyway, do you have any words of encouragement that you can share that might get me to finally show up in prayer in this way, Danica?" So I really appreciate that, Danica, that you actually admit that you might be afraid of the silence, because I think you just described our nation, like actually the world at large, the culture in which we live is afraid of silence. Like, what are we afraid of? We're afraid of maybe seeing who we are. We're afraid of being alone with ourselves or with God, right? And we're always looking to distract ourselves. And I think that's a very normal part of our world today. It's a normal symptom of living in our world today, but that doesn't mean we embrace that. So adoration is countercultural in that way. And so I'm going to just say, Danica, you've got this inspiration to go, and you've even thought about it enough that you've typed out a message to me to share about it and ask about it. So I'm going to say, just go. Get yourself in there. You said there's a chapel near you. Get in there. Commit to just doing 10 minutes. Sometimes people feel afraid because you hear this phrase, a holy hour, and they're like, I have to sit in there for an hour? Like, what on earth? You know? And there's no rule that says you have to sit in there for an hour. You can go for 10 minutes. Just go. Just get started and see what it's like. And it will grow from there, I promise you. Also, know that there's no wrong way to do it. Sometimes people are afraid of going to Eucharistic adoration because they're like, no one ever taught me how to do it. But that's because there's no one right way to do it. You can go in there and just sit in silence. You can go in there with a spiritual book you're reading. You can go in there with the Bible and read scripture passages. You could go in with your AirPods and listen to liturgical music. You can just, you know, pray some of your, you know, favorite prayers. You can say the rosary. There's no wrong way to do it. I mean, other than like, you know, ignoring our Lord's presence and scrolling through your phone or something. But it's not liturgy where there are rules about it, right? So it's prayer. And my good friend, Allison Gingras, actually, she came on the girlfriends community and shared in one of our live video chats that we have on Wednesday night. She, at the start of Lent, she was sharing about sacramentals and different ways to pray, and especially talking about praying the rosary. And that was like a really helpful distinction that she made in what she shared. She said the rosary, like people get caught up in the idea of praying the rosary because they're like, I don't know how to do it right. You know, or like the, you think like I have to pray all five decades at once or it doesn't quote unquote count. I can't just pray a decade of it. But she was pointing out it's not a liturgy. There aren't rules about it like that. There's not a wrong way to do it. You're free to pray it the way that you want to pray it. And the same is true for adoration. So don't feel like you have to do it in some particular way that you don't know or that you need to learn or whatever. That you do it your way. And just sitting there in silence and, you know, being in the presence of God is absolutely a right way to do it. And then also know that you don't, you can talk in there, you can talk to God, but you can also just listen. You can do a little bit of both. So just know that there's not a wrong way to do it. And I'm going to encourage you, Danica, I know you're on the brink of doing this because you're thinking about it. You're praying about it. You were kind of nudged to think about it when you listened to the show about showing up. God is calling you to show up in this way. So I'm going to pray for you to have the grace to follow through on this commitment and just begin getting started with adoration. It's something that's going to truly become a gift to you in your life. And hey, say a prayer for me while you're in there. I will be praying for you. Thank you so much, Danica, for writing in. If you would like to write in with your question, your feedback, if there's something we've shared about here on the podcast that speaks to you or you have a question about or you want to argue about, I'd love to hear from you. I would love your feedback. So send me an email at danielle@daniellebean.com or we can connect on social media. I'm Danielle Bean on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, you can connect with me on Voxer if that's your jam. You can go over to ascensionpress.com. The link to connect with me on Voxer is always in the show notes over at ascensionpress.com. And finally, the way you can stay connected to those show notes, super easy. Make sure you are subscribed so those show notes are always getting sent to your inbox. You always have all the links and all the pertinent things for every episode of the Girlfriends Podcast. And you will never miss an episode of the Girlfriends Podcast. So the way to do that is just text the word girlfriends to 33777. Super simple. Boom. We're connected. I would love for us to be able to stay in touch in that way. But for now, I just want to thank you for being here. That's all the time we have for today, but I am thrilled that we were able to connect right here in the podcast. I want to encourage you to come over to the Girlfriends Community at girlfriendscommunity.com. It's a natural extension of what we do here in the podcast, and we would love to have you join our growing community of faith-filled women who are coming together for the express purpose of growing in Catholic faith and friendship with one another. Would love to have you be a part of what we have going on over there. But for now, thank you for being here. It's been a joy connecting with you here, and I hope you enjoy your day and God bless your week. Girlfriends is a collaboration between DanielleBean.com and Ascension, the leader in Catholic faith formation.